I think I need to do one. No.
Go do it. Do it now.
No, I'm
try.
Fine. I'm fine.
Push it on out.
I have this weird thing where when
you
my tummy gets, yes. Yeah. So for auditions, I'll be like sitting there and I'm like, here it comes. And I'm like, excuse me, do you have a toilet?
Oh my God.
And then some of the casting rooms, the toilet's like right there where you're sitting and there are other people sitting around. And then I'm stuffing toilet paper down the toilet to muffle the sound of the poo running the water. And I'm like, oh my God, the smell. Thank God I have perfume. You can spray, spray, spray. It's really crazy. So that happens to me. And whenever I get like a little bit – and it's not even nerves. It's also excitement. I get excited and I'm like, I need to do poo.
We talk about this all the time actually because – well, Sonia, our nanny, who I love so much, and she's a doula as well. And she's been a birth doula for me and a postpartum doula. But she cracks up at me all the time because if we're like – okay, like we're driving to the airport and I am one of those people that I get nervous on the way to the airport. What am I nervous about? Why am I nervous about going to the airport? It's so silly. But like I start getting nervous and I'm like, okay, I got to like get my boarding pass. By the way, most people just get them on their phone and I'm like, oh, I'm going to get mine at the gate, you know, and like nobody else does that. So I get nervous about that. And then we like – and then we're getting close, approaching, and I'm like, ooh, I'm like so much anxiety is building up in my tummy and butterflies.
Oh,
and I'm like – and as soon as we get there and we get out of the car and I'm strapping the baby onto me, every single time I'm like, I have to go to the bathroom. I'm like, can somebody stand with the car? Can you guys do a couple of laps?
Oh my God.
Or
why
if I'm
you
by
so
myself.
Triggered?
I don't know. I get triggered every time I'm traveling. So for anyone who sees me in the airport, if I'm sweating, that's why.
Oh my God. I think you have travel trauma.
I do have travel trauma.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
So I get nervous about flying, even though I fly a lot, or I did before the pandemic. And then same with auditioning and – or just like – anything that I'm about to do. When I was a kid, I used to get up and sing at church. Like it was every Sunday and I'd be like getting him to sing. But I'd have to go light up the bathroom first. I'd be like,
oh, my goodness.
Back out.
And they're not like normal poops either. They're like,
it's like a stress. I know. It's a stress. Oh my God, I can't believe it.
Well, because we hold our emotions in our bellies. So our digestion is affected.
Well, don't they say that your brain – no, it's the brain-gut connection, right? So
it's exactly right.
Your brain is connected to – your brain is sending messages to your tummy. Your tummy is sending messages to your brain.
The worst one, and I know people will know what I'm talking about here. You know, like let's say you're on a date with a hot guy or something. Mm-hmm. Or like you're just around someone you want to impress and you get the urge to fart. And so there are multiple choices that you have in this moment. You either like – walk over to talk to a waiter and do a quick little whoof and then come back to the table, or you do what I have done over the years and learn the art of the suck-in, and then your stomach starts going my butt did that the other day during our podcast and I was like, my tummy's grumbling.
And then your stomach was like probably very, very distended and uncomfortable as you're sitting there.
I know. It's like just let it flow when it needs to come out. Just let it come out. Do you know, it's funny that we have a theme of talking about poo.
It happens all the time.
Is it? Why is that?
I think it becomes a natural part of your existence when you're a mother, is that you're dealing with so much poo. Like, if you think about your morning, right? Okay, I wiped multiple booties this morning and changed diapers, and we're in the middle of potty training. So we have a baby running back and forth to the potty telling me that she has to pee-poo 25 times. And I don't know if it's a pee or a poo.
Pee-poo.
Yeah, it's a pee-poo. And then it's just like poo just becomes – like it's not something that my own personal – like I don't poop. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't – like, Eric and I, when we have a
– yeah, no. That is bizarre to me, by the way.
I don't talk about it with him. When he brings it up, I get sweaty, and I kind of – I'm like, oh, hi, yeah, we're not going to have this conversation.
Do you fart in front
of
each other?
No, I don't. No, no, no.
Would he let a rip in front of you, though?
Not really, no.
Oh, my God, you know. Guys are so weird.
Well, I know.
I wonder if there are other people listening to this right now being like, absolutely not. That is disgusting. Why would you ever do that in front of your spouse?
I know.
I know people who are like one way where they'll do full poos in the toilet.
Oh my God. I could never. Literally only during birth is there an experience where Eric's like, oh, she also poos just like everyone else.
She's also someone that poos. And that's what like, a poo looks like.
Yeah. So, okay. So caveat, we're going to talk about poo a lot on this podcast.
On this podcast.
Also, we should probably do a little intro to our podcast. So hi everyone. Welcome to the Mother Days. I had way too much coffee this morning, so if it feels like I'm running hot over here, it's because I am. I'm Sarah Wright Olson, and
I'm Teresa Palmer. We are the Mother Days.
You are listening to,
and you guys
Mother
are our
Days.
Daisies.
Yeah, welcome.
I like
Daisies.
That name.
I mean, I love
hey,
it too.
Daisies.
I'm a flower child at heart, so I love listening to the Daisies.
Do you see how long my hair is right now? I'm
I know.
In full hippie mode. I've got the floral dress.
You
I
do.
My hair is almost down to my bum. It hasn't been cut in about 3 years.
Oh my gosh. I need a trim.
Looking wild.
So for any of you who are just joining us for the very first time, we started a blog 8 years ago called Your Zen Mama. Then we wrote a book, did a bunch of video logs, some postpartum, mm-hmm. some pregnancy video logs. And now we are bringing yes. you the Mother Days.
A podcast.
A podcast.
There we go.
Yeah. So
a
if
podcast.
You.
Not that there are any other mothering podcasts out there. We're certainly the only ones.
Say, that's right.
But ours is going to be really fun.
But
it's going to be fun. We're talking to cool people.
That's right. We're talking to some fun people. We're fun people. We're people who like to have fun.
We do.
If you are folding laundry, driving down the road, drinking kombucha or coffee,
alcohol,
sitting in a bath. What are
like
your favorite ways to listen to a podcast?
I weirdly lie on the floor in the shower.
Oh, there you go.
And I put my phone in a cup to amplify the sound over in the corner on the bench in my shower.
Yeah,
and I lie and I listen to true crime.
You are so – you're just like – you love to live on the edge. You live on the edge. You're like,
yeah.
That iPhone,
rebel,
they said it can get wet now, so I'm just going to put it in my shower in a cup.
By the way, how bullshit is that? I feel like so many times I'm like, oh, my God, it's finally 100% waterproof.
No, it's not.
But then you still have to get the bag of rice out when you drop it in the toilet when you're doing a poo and it falls out.
Oh, my God.
So
and
annoying.
We're back to poop. So strap on your yoga pants, your put on your long white dress,
your patchouli,
put on your patchouli perfume, huddle your little bodies and your boobies that are feeding your babies around the campfire, and let's freaking do this.
Let's do this.
We're so excited today because what are we doing? What are we talking about today?
We're talking about birth, my favorite subject in all the land. But specifically, we are talking about, between us, we've had many births, but we are talking about the event that is your first birth, your very first birth, and how weird and wild and wonderful it is, and unexpected. Mine was certainly very unexpected, and I think it's a particular kind of experience because we go in with these expectations of what birth might be like. We've never experienced it before, so we're just sort of thinking we know what's going to unfold, and then It's like you get hit by a freight train and it's not really your experience anymore. So that is what we're talking about today. We were at each other's first birth.
Yeah, it's kind of fun that we're doing our first birth podcast because both of us were present. So anything that we don't remember on our own, or as the doulas love to say, or the midwives love to say, is that everybody has a very different experience at your birth than you do. So, and it's true, like you carry in your own stuff to a birth as a person who's present at birth, and then also as a mother who's entering the space. So a lot of times there's moments where you kind of leave this world and you go up into some other space in transition or whatever it is where you're just like maybe potentially not fully present here, but you've gone internal or you've gone inside. So other things that are happening around might, you know, might not be something that you recognize, which is what happened to me at my birth.
Yes. You're in the zone.
You're in the zone.
You're in a faraway land.
Mm-hmm. It's so true.
I don't know what that land was like. I'd like to know, though. You should try and explain what your coping mechanism was. She looked very peaceful, though. You're quite a silent laborer.
Oh, my gosh. I love that you said that because inside my brain, it feels like I'm so loud. Everything feels so loud to me. I do think, before I jump into the story, I do think that I have auditory sensitivities. And so I think that in my normal life I have them where this like really loud noises trigger me. They bother me. So there's a lot of times when things are getting kind of chaotic where I have to like tell myself to, you know, I'm okay, you're okay, everything's fine. You don't like my energy will start to go and then I feel like a little unsettled. And so the same thing on another level happens to me every time I give birth where like if anyone's talking in a normal voice, it's times 10 in my head. So like when a nurse talks to me, I'm like shushing everyone, or at least I think I am. I'm telling everybody to be quiet. It doesn't sound very nice inside of me, but everyone says I'm very polite.
You were really polite.
I know, I'm telling you.
I left Sarah's birth with PTSD. So there you go.
Yeah.
I was 12 weeks pregnant and I was one of her doulas, I guess. I'm one of her birth helpers.
Yeah.
And like the first 3.5 hours, I was good. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Birth is beautiful. Wow, what an experience. Then we got to the end and I was like, cannot do this. What was I thinking? I'm taking home birth off the table.
Oh my God.
And I am going to be put out. I'm going to be put to sleep and someone will take this baby out of me. I had some real trauma I had to unpack.
That's really, I feel so bad that that happened. And you know what? I'm going to try really hard.
It was good for me.
I'm going to try really hard to not trigger anyone today.
No.
Okay. So, what's kind of wild is that this pregnancy happened 9 years ago. My son is going to turn 9 in 2022, which is so crazy. So I was very pregnant with him and approaching my due date. And the doctors were telling me, or the midwife, everybody was telling me that he was going to be a big baby. And I started off with an OBGYN and then transitioned to a midwife and somewhere during my pregnancy. And then when it got closer to the due date, I started to get a lot of contractions, but like Braxton Hicks contractions. I've now learned that the reason I got those is because of the positioning of the baby. He was coming down a little off of whatever they call like the optimal position. And so
anterior is optimal.
Yes. And it was causing my body to have these Braxton Hicks contractions all the time. And so my body was trying to move him into position. But I was planning a home birth, and we were excited. I'd been reading so much Ina Mae Gaskin, Spiritual Midwifery, and Ina Mae's Guide to Childbirth. These books fueled me with stories and stories that were amazing. And if you haven't read those books, they're so inspiring. And entertaining too.
They are so entertaining. Okay, I have a question because I wonder if other people are thinking this.
Okay.
This is your first birth.
Yes.
What made you decide a home birth? Because I think traditionally people who haven't given birth before, they figure out what all their friends have done before. And, you know, the advice is, find a doctor that you love and have a birth in hospital.
Yes.
Where did that? So if we could just like rewind it back for a second, I just want to know, why a home birth?
One of my favorite ways to start the day is a shower to wake up my senses, but mostly so I have an excuse to lather myself in Osea's Mega Moisture Duo. These seaweed-powered heroes provide results you can see and confidence you can feel with skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for face products. And when I begin and end my day in this intentional way, I feel and sleep better. And you can get 10% off your first order with our code MOTHERDAYS at OseaMalibu.com.
Yes, I agree. Osea's Mega Moisture Duo is up-leveling my skincare on a daily basis. I love the simplicity of the two products. They're nutrient-rich, ultra-hydrating, and the Undaria Collagen Body Lotion leaves you with such a silky, smooth finish. The Undaria Algae Body Oil is clinically proven to instantly improve the look of skin elasticity, and the formula delivers moisture in a really potent way. Since using it, my skin looks brighter, it feels softer, and it has a more sculpted look. Just taking the time out to nourish your body is a moment to practice mindfulness, self-love, and compassion. We all need more of that.
So show your skin some love with clean vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOTHERDAYS at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com and use code MOTHERDAYS for 10% off. As a mom of three, I know how hard it can be to figure out what meals that you're going to make for the week. Well, Green Chef has swooped in to save the day. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for clean eating, delivering pre-portioned and prepped, nutrition-approved, quality foods. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce, responsibly sourced proteins, and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a clean routine. And my girls love to follow along with the recipe sheet that's so beautiful and help me prepare all the food.
Each meal kit is delivered directly to your doorstep and includes pre-measured ingredients and also some pre-chopped produce, which is great because my pet peeve in life is chopping garlic and then having really stinky fingers for like 4 days afterwards. This cuts the dinner prep time in half, leaving us with more minutes in the day to connect with our kids. Each week, it's really easy. You just choose from 80 plus flavor-packed options. You can customize your meals to suit your lifestyle with lots of different preferences, including plant-based options for our family, which makes us feel really seen. So thank you, Green Chef. Also, April is Earth Month, which means supporting Green Chef aligns perfectly as they prioritize sustainability as a core value. They offset 100% of delivery emissions and 100% of plastic in each box. Green Chef partners with Plastic Bank to collect ocean-bound plastic pound for every box they deliver.
So go to greenchef.com/MotherDays50 and use code MOTHERDAYS50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. greenchef.com/MotherDays50 and use code MOTHERDAYS50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well.
Do you know how much cash back you're leaving on the table settling for the wrong credit card? Imagine earning up to 5% cash back on your groceries for the next 30 years. Think of all that cash back on those overpriced kombuchas. NerdWallet helps everyone make smarter financial decisions today that future you will thank you for. With NerdWallet, you won't regret missing out on rewards. NerdWallet lets you compare smart cashback credit cards side by side to make the most of your everyday spending. So what could future you do with more cashback? Splurge on some fancy champagne with the gals, or order fine dining to the house and watch a good true crime doco? Whatever it is, make it happen with a smarter cashback credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Well, when I was pregnant with Wyatt, I got to around month 4. And I remember going into my doctor at the time and talking to her about my idea about the way that I wanted my birth. And she just didn't seem very into the idea that I wanted to have this natural birth at the hospital. She was kind of like, well, we'll see what happens. And it made me feel uncomfortable. And I had done something. I think I had a cold and was like coughing and hurt my rib a little bit while I was pregnant. So I needed to go get some help from a chiropractor because I was having trouble with mobility and I was in pain a lot. And so I went to see this amazing chiropractor named Dr. Berlin. And I was laying on his table and he was working on my back, and I was telling him my story about my OBGYN, and I was like, yeah, I'm from Kentucky originally, and I don't have any friends who have given birth here, so I just kind of know that you're supposed to be with an OBGYN and then go to the hospital. And he was like, well, have you ever thought about doing a home birth? And I was like, no, I haven't. I was like, is that something that people do? And he was like, yeah, it's something that people do. And so he kind of introed me to, Ida Mae Gaskin and to watching The Business of Being Born. And he was like, look, just check it out and see how it makes you feel. Like, is this something that you're interested in? And I was very interested. I was like, wow, yes, this is the experience that I want to have. Everything that sort of had been laid out to me about a hospital birth that was at the time, it was not something I was super excited about. And also I just felt a little, I don't know, that felt scarier to me than a home birth at the time. Mm-hmm. And so, and I don't know why, but that was just something that was coming up for me. And so then as I was talking to him and to other people, they were saying, look, you got to do what makes you feel the most comfortable, right? Because when you're in birth, like, you want to feel comfortable. If being at the hospital and having a natural birth at the hospital makes you feel the most comfortable, then you should do that. If being at home mm-hmm. makes you feel the most comfortable, do that, right? And so – and there's a lot of things that come into play. Like, you have to have a really healthy pregnancy. You have to be a good candidate for it. Like, I wanted to make sure that I was close enough to a hospital if anything happened, all of those things. So – all of those boxes were checked throughout my pregnancy. And then I was like, oh, I'm doing this. I'm going to have a home birth with this midwife. And she was one of those people that was like, okay, I need to know your diet. You need to be walking 5 miles a day. I was like, 5 miles a day? I was like, hello.
And you really committed to that too.
I was like, how do you do that? It takes hours. I'm not walking fast. I'm waddling. And she was like, don't walk hills because it builds too much muscle in your lower abdomen, like walk flat ground. And I was like, so what, I got to go to like a high school track and do that. So I did that. I went to a high school track nearby.
You really committed to it. I love it.
I was like, I couldn't find a flat neighborhood. I did do some neighborhood walking. So I was committing to as much walking as I could, eating healthy, and then we were approaching doing this home birth. And you know what's interesting, and I probably should lay this out here, if you're going to do a home birth, there's a lot more that goes into it than just like, oh, I'm going to have my baby at home. Like, there's a lot of stuff you have to order or, have prepared, unless your midwife is like bringing all of the stuff over. To have a baby at home, because, there's a lot of mess in birth. And so when they're like, oh, you should get a small package of wee-wee pads. Like, no, you should get like a giant package of wee-wee pads because there's going to be a lot of – we ran out of wee-wee pads at my first birth and we ended up using like newspaper and anything else that was like disposable, right? It was Teresa.
Yes, we did. I was chasing her around with these puppy pee pads. Like, we've only got one more. Oh, God.
Oh, my gosh.
There's lots of fluid from all the holes.
That's true, from all the holes. So, you know, I had this idea of what a home birth was going to be like. And I was excited to give it a try. And, yeah, it was my first birth. And a lot of people were like, I don't know if you should do that. First births take a really long time. There can be complications. Like, if you've watched any animal documentaries, which I do all the time with my children, you'll see that when animals are birthing for the first time, it's really complicated. Same with us. You know, like a cow's giving birth in the field, you want to keep an eye on them when they're giving birth for the first time. Second and third, you don't really have to watch them. They can kind of go do it on their own. So, but farm facts, okay? They're going to have some farm facts on this podcast.
I love it.
So, yeah. So, cut to it's a couple days before the birth. And my husband is going to have to go back to work in a few days, and my amazing doula, Ana Paula Markel, says to me, you know, if you're concerned about your husband having to go back to work, then maybe just talk to the baby and tell the baby, like, hey, maybe it's time for you to come now. If there's an opportunity for you to come now, daddy has a few days off, let's do this. So Eric and I lay in bed on this, like, I think it was like a Wednesday. And we both started talking to Wyatt, and we knew his name at the time. So we were like, Wyatt, you know, daddy has to go back to work in a few days. If you can come soon, that would be amazing, because then, you know, he'll be able to have some time with you. And then I start going into labor the next morning. And which is crazy, right? So I don't know if it was a coincidence or what it is, but I definitely felt
it's not a coincidence.
Well, I felt very connected to you know, just having that conversation with him. And then the next morning I woke up and I was like, wow, I feel really crampy. And I went to see my midwife, and she checked me, and I was like 1 centimeter dilated, but my contractions were really consistent. They were about 10 minutes to 8 minutes apart, but lasting all day, and I was still feeling the pressure and everything. I think that for me the cramping kind of just felt like warm pressure that was happening, and then it would like release. My belly would tighten and then it would release. And then as the day went on, my midwife was like, you should go for a walk, like a long walk. And so I did a 3-mile walk while I was feeling all of these things. And maybe that was a little overdoing it, because I kept having to stop and get on all fours, and things were feeling really tight and really heavy. But I was like, oh, this is going to help, you know, move things along. And so that night, it was still feeling pretty consistent, but I didn't feel like I was in full on labor yet. And so I decided to just lay down, go to sleep. And as soon as I started to rest and get really comfortable, and I think I dozed off for a little bit, then I woke up and it was way more intense. Like, things felt real. And I was like, oh, game on. Wow, this is consistent. I started like timing it for an hour. At this point, it's like midnight. I write my midwife and I'm like, I'm so in labor right now. It's full on. And I'm laughing because it was my first time. And so I thought, like, okay, from the initial feelings of those waves and feeling like you're in labor to when it amps up a little bit more, that at that point
you're like, well, the baby's about to
come, exactly. So, like, I felt like, and even though
you're like, well, this must be and the baby comes,
that's right. And I read so much about it in you know, Ina May's books with every single birth story. And so those moments when things would change a little bit, those are the moments that kind of the women were talking about, you know, moving around more or rolling their hips, and then things would amp up even more, and then it was like transition time, right? And so I was sort of like making everything go faster in my brain. So
yeah, of course,
right? Yeah, I was like making it all move ahead. So I wrote my midwife, and
I must be 10 centimeters.
Oh, 100%. I have to be 10 centimeters.
3 hours. I'm fully dilated. Yeah. I'm ready to go.
Exactly. So I ended up calling my midwife, and she was at another birth, and she was like, "I'll come over, and then I'll check you, and we'll see where you're at." And I was around 2 centimeters at this point. And I was like, oh, okay. And by the way, my doula was there. Like, I was very present. I was like rolling my hips. I called Teresa and I was like, this is happening. Get over here.
And yeah, it was like 2:30 a.m. And I was like, is it? Am I? Should I? I remember.
And Teresa was like, driving. I don't want to miss
so
anything.
Fast, thinking the baby was about. I thought the baby was coming.
Yeah.
So I was like, mm-hmm. I like drove the 45 minutes so fast, pregnant myself, being like, oh my God. I at least, because I was taking photos.
I know.
So I was like, oh my gosh, I at least have to get him coming out. I need to arrive and he'll come like 5 minutes later. Little did we know.
Little did we know. We had a long way to go. So, yeah. So then at this point, Teresa comes over and my doula's there. My midwife is peaced out at this point. She's like, guys, this is going to be a while. I'm going to go take a nap. And so
that's right.
She was exhausted because she just came from another birth. So I'm rolling my hips out on a yoga ball. Eric's prepping the birthing tub because, like, I'm convinced I'm going to give birth in the water. And, you know, Teresa's taking photos. And there's a lot of really good oxytocin flowing in the house, right? Like, everybody has got good vibes, good feelings.
We're pumped.
And we are ready to try all the things. Like, we're going to try everything possible. And I spend the evening. I did not get into the bath in the evening. It happened the next day. So I spend the evening doing all of the, like, dancing with Eric, like holding onto the wall, holding onto the yoga ball, like everything I can to keep moving, but like rolling my hips out. And it's clear that that I'm feeling a lot of pressure on the right side of my body. So what that tells me now, obviously not then, is that there was the baby was in a kind of a weird position. So cut to, it's the next morning and the midwife is going to come and she's going to check me. It's like 7 a.m. or something. And I'm feeling,
and no one's had any sleep.
No one's had not a wink, not a little schmidge.
Apart from the midwife. She's had a great old snooze.
And so,
oh God.
So she comes and checks me and she's like, you are 2 centimeters dilated.
Oh God. It was,
and I was like,
mortifying.
Wait, what? Okay. And to say that I was a little bit discouraged, I already knew that there was a chance that I could maybe not be dilated anymore. And I was prepped for that, right? So I was a little bit discouraged. So she says, you know what? I need you to go on and maybe we had moved like 1 centimeter. Maybe it was 3 at this point.
I think it was 4.
4.
I think,
okay.
I remember.
All right. Okay.
I remember distinctly. I thought you were giving birth imminently. I was like, the head is coming out. I'm ready. I've got my angle right by
That's
your vagina.
Right. That's right.
And she was like, so you're at a
4.
You're at a 4.
Okay. Okay. So I'm 4 centimeters dilated.
Like, oh, fuck me.
She's like, we're in for it.
I wanted to die for you. Like, I literally was like.
Because it had been, you guys, it had been a lot.
You handled it so beautifully.
And I was like, okay, so I've moved 2 centimeters. All right. So at this point, she tells me to go on a walk. She wants me to go walk outside for 2 hours. It's August. It's hot. It's like 7:30 in the morning. And so I'm like, okay, let's do this. I have photos of Eric and I right before we leave to go on our walk. So Eric's going to walk with me for 1 hour. And then Anna Paula, my doula, is going to walk with me for 1 hour. And everybody else is going to like take naps and sort of like eat something and get their selves feeling good. And so we go into this 2 hour walk and then we come back. This is the point where we really think that something is going to change. And then our midwife, and I say our midwife because Teresa also used her, but she comes back and checks me after these 2 hours, and I haven't moved at this point. There is no, like, it's 4 centimeters. Nothing's changed. And so she says to me, what's happening in your mind over the last, like, however long this has been, hours? And I said, you know, I just keep trying to envision, like, a tunnel opening up or, like, a flower opening. I'm trying to visualize these things happening in my mind as – because I'm trying to help my body, like coach my body where to go, right? And so I had read about people visualizing. And by the way, this totally works for people. She looked at me dead in the face and she goes, stop doing that. And I was like, okay. She's like,
it's not working.
That's not working. And I was like, okay, okay, all right. So that's not working for me. We've tried that. Moving on to the next thing. And so then she was like, you know what? Does it sound good to get in the water? And I was like, yes, this is what I've been wanting to do, was get in the water. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yes, this sounds amazing. Let's do that. And so I get into –
let's just insert here for a second why this wasn't an option earlier. So oftentimes your midwife or your doctor won't want you to get into water until you're in active labor, because oftentimes getting into water, everyone gets really relaxed, maybe the contractions slow down. So obviously at this point, your midwife was like, all right, we've been trying all these things. She's now at 4 centimeters. Like, let's just see if this changes anything. Yeah. So she gets in the water and keep going.
So I get in the water. And everything does start to change. My body relaxes. The pressure on that spot on my right side that was hurting so much has now released a bit. And I'm really getting into a groove. So I'm kind of doing this thing in the birthing tub where I'm moving my body from one side to another. And then there's this thing called a rebozo that doulas will use, where they kind of do this thing over your belly, and it sort of goes back and forth
with
with a scarf, and it helps to move maybe the baby out of position a little bit or whatever is happening. It helps release your muscles.
It releases the pressure.
Yeah. And so helps you a little bit, and then helps your body to relax. And so my doula is using the rebozo on me while I'm in the water. And then I just start doing this flow back and forth when she's done doing that. So I'm kind of like going from my left side to my right side. And Eric comes over to help me because it's hard – because the water's actually kind of deep. It was hard for me to keep my head up. And so he's like holding my head up above the water, and I'm just going back and forth. And this is my optimal – this is my optimal position for me. This is like, okay, I finally found my groove. Like, this feels so good. And I fall asleep in between each contraction. I'm falling asleep for those, like, 1 minute, whatever, 50 seconds, whatever that is. And it feels like really good sleep. And then I'm waking back up again and having the contraction and then falling asleep again. And he's holding my head, poor thing. I have no idea. Do you know how long I was in there? Hours, like a few hours?
About 3,
yeah.
4 hours.
Okay, so he's –
I mean, he talks about, like, he was holding a squat.
He was holding a squat.
Holding her head in a squat for that long. And everyone – we started getting worried about him. We're like, should we try and help him? Let's at least bring him some water,
poor thing.
Some snacks.
So he's trying to get out of the squat, reposition himself, and every time I grab him in this, like, death grip, and I'm like, no, don't move. I need you, you know, and he's like, oh, okay. And of course he's, like, so loving and wonderful and wants to be so supportive, and he stays with me the whole time. And so then finally my sounds that are coming out of me start to shift a little bit, and at one point, I started saying, like, oh, and my doula, she goes, say yes. Every time that you get this big feeling, say yes, and invite this feeling to be even bigger. And I was like, yes, you know, and I was like, bigger. And I just kept asking for it to be – I was like, wow, you know, I kept saying wow. And yeah. yes, and so and inviting the rushes to be bigger and stronger, and so then my vocaling started, like my vocal noises started to change, and they became a little deeper, a little mm-hmm. guttural, a little more animalistic. Gushural. Yeah, on accident. I mean, like I wasn't doing it on purpose. And my midwife came in and she was like, okay, this sounds really good. This sounds promising. She's like, let's check you. And I was like, okay. And so then I they had me get up or get out so she could check me, right?
Onto the bed.
Onto the bed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they yeah. checked me. And at this point, I have gone from 4 centimeters to like, what was it? 8, 9?
I think it was you were right about to start transition.
Yeah.
So you would have been around 8 yeah. centimeters.
It was around yeah. 8 centimeters.
Everyone cheered. Everyone was like, yes! Like we all, you were working
so hard.
So incredibly hard. And like what you didn't know was happening, like over the 24 hours, however long it was, we would have these little sidebars with Eric. Like he would walk out and he was like white as a ghost.
Oh
his
gosh.
Eyes like, oof. Like he was keeping it together so beautifully with you and being so supportive and just like very casual and calm and cool. And we'd all go out into the kitchen to get a snack and he'd be like, oh my God. And I'd be like, oh my God, how is she doing this? We could not believe how you were handling it. It was unbelievable. And it's like we all took a breath and went back in that room
oh my
to
gosh.
Be with you because you were just.
I was in the zone.
It was unbelievable.
I was totally
you really were.
In
you really
the zone.
Were. And, then, and it's almost as though you weren't even aware of how long it had been.
No.
You were very present, which thank goodness, because they always say take each contraction one at a time
right.
rather than think about how much longer you have.
Yeah.
You seemed to be really present, which was just such a beautiful thing to watch and observe.
Well, I was, you know, I had read that you could fall asleep during like in between the contractions. But I totally got what that meant. It was just like allowing yourself to just rest your eyes and your body will take the sleep that it needs, right? So I really mm-hmm. was falling into that. That feeling sometimes when you start to fall asleep and your body feels like it's falling into the bed and then you're like, whoa, am I where am I?
Yeah.
That kept happening, which was nice because I think I really needed it. So then once she checked me and we were at this point, we were all so pumped up. Everyone was so excited.
Yeah.
And then positioning-wise, it felt like my body was ready to push, but it wasn't time to push yet. And I kept having the feeling of needing to push. And because baby was in a certain position where he was like all the way on my right side, it was making me feel like I needed to push. And so then what we ended up, oh, and my water hadn't broken yet. That was the other thing.
That's right.
Is that my water hadn't broken. So, and we kept like trying to figure out if I had peed. I didn't know if I had peed. And so, because I was in the water for so long, I couldn't figure out if I had peed or not. And so then we were like, gosh, I really need to release urine. Like that's important during birth as well,
it really
you know?
Is.
And so, cause there's mm-hmm. a lot of pressure with that. So then I end up
– it makes the contractions more intense too if you're not –
if you're not –
emptying your bladder
that's
frequently.
Right. That's right. So then we start doing like a lot of different things where I'm pacing back and forth in the living room. I'm going into the bedroom. I'm against the bed. I'm against the wall. I'm kind of fast forwarding through all of this a little bit where – because this is going on for a very long time. But then they all started telling me, you know, when you're – feeling like you're about to go into a contraction, just drop down into a squat and see if that's going to help a little mm-hmm. bit. You're not pushing, you're just dropping down into a squat. So I started doing that, but then my body really wanted to push every time I dropped down into a squat. But I think it was like it had to do with me releasing the urine. So, and I was pooing all over the house, like all over wee-wee mm-hmm. pads everywhere.
Yes, right.
Yeah, it was –
these cute little piddly poos, these little like squirts. I was catching them.
That is
and there would,
nothing
go down
cute
your leg
about that.
It was just like, it was so cute because there were these little like pitiful, like, Oh my God. Wasn't even a massive release. It was just this tiny little. And I was, me and Sarah's other friend, Casey,
oh, yeah.
we were like wiping you.
Well, that's what I was like, just about to say is that Casey showed up. This is about the time that Casey showed up. I was in the living room. She walked in the door. She's wearing a gorgeous white dress. She is stunning. And yeah. I barely notice her. But I did remember she was wearing white and thinking, oh no, I'm going to get her so messy. And I hope it's not a fancy.
Ruin her designer dress.
For sure. So she pops in and like, she's like, what have I just walked into? Because I am pantsless. I'm wearing a tie-dye tank top, one of the very few things that fits me at this point. And it's huge. It's like, you know, bigger. It's like, I don't know. It's like way bigger than a normal tank top for me. I think it was Eric's tank top. And
But you run hot. You
run so hot. So I really just wanted to be naked. But I also kind of wanted to wear something because I was going back and forth between air conditioning and outside. And it was just August. It was so hot. And so I had this big tank top on, but I was pantsless. Like no underwear, no pants. Just walking back and forth, pacing in my living room. And then I go into the bedroom and I'm holding onto the bed and I do a squat and then I pee. Big, huge pee, big release. Everybody thinks my water broke. It didn't break. It was the most massive pee that I've been holding on to for so long.
It was just a nice wee.
Nice wee.
But we were excited about that too.
Super excited
about
that.
We were cheering on all the things.
All the things.
All the everything that was coming
everything
out.
Everything that happened.
Like, hell yeah.
So then we get to, I'm 9 centimeters dilated because my midwife checks me and she's like, you know what? I'm thinking we should break your water. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And so she breaks my water. Baby comes down against the cervix and my cervix starts to swell, but we don't know this yet. So so it actually, when the cervix starts to swell, it's closing the cervix a little bit. And so at this point, I go out and I'm doing the stairs. I start going up and down the stairs a whole bunch of times. And I'm going back and forth between that and listening to like African drum music to try to like wiggle my hips. And I'm a horrible dancer, horrible dancer. But they're like, listen to this beat and like wiggle your hips, right? And so then I'm like trying to wiggle my hips and I'm like, what are they talking about? Everything they asked me to do, I did it. And there was no
happily with a smile.
Okay. No question.
Sure.
Anything. If she asked me to do 40,000 squats and go up and down the stairs sideways, and I did it.
You're like, I'll try all those things.
All the things. And every time you're going in, going to have a contraction, go down into a squat on the stairs. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. And then we realized that my cervix was swelling. And so I had to actually now get into a position on the bed where she would massage my cervix as the baby is head is coming out.
And help sort of open it up.
Mm-hmm.
Cause usually cervical lips like 9 to 9.5 yes. centimeters. So she should have been, she would have been fully dilated and pushing.
Yes.
If it weren't for the cervical lip.
That's
which
right.
is like very, the cervix is very fatigued. It's now swollen. And poor Sarah, she's lying on the bed and the midwife has the hand up the vagines. And is holding it open and massaging and holding it open, stretching. And, oh, Sarah, you were
for four
unbelievable.
Hours, you guys. For 4 hours, I was hearing all of my wonderful friends and midwife and doula tell me that they could see the head for 4 hours.
It was 4 hours. I've never heard of this before.
I know.
Like, I think at the time I was like, what? But now I'm like, I
pushing
actually,
for 4 hours
so
is a very
rare
long
that
time.
I hear. Yeah. Yeah, don't worry, people. That's probably not going to be your story, but it was Sarah's,
yeah.
and
yeah.
you handled it like an utter champ.
Well, I didn't Sarah, know it was 4 hours, but it was such a long time of pushing the baby mm-hmm. down, and it was the baby's positioning. Honestly, that's what it was, and mm-hmm. so, and
he was a big bub.
He was a big guy. He was very thick and girthy, you know, like the whole middle section mm-hmm. of him was huge. So it wasn't really his head. And then I'm just going to kind of.
But she was doing this with a hand up the vagina
yes.
the whole time.
Her hand was up my vagina, pushing the cervical lip to the side. I don't know how long it took for the head to get past the cervical lip, but once the head was past the cervical lip, then I was able to like push a little bit more. But it was because he was so thick in his middle, that part was hard to get through too. So I'm going to kind of fast.
Did it feel productive though?
No.
Like once his head was past that, it didn't feel.
No, it never felt productive for me. Actually, I don't think it's ever felt productive for me to push until the very end when the baby comes out. Then I'm like, oh, that's productive. Yeah. But I don't feel things happening the way that other people describe. Like, I can feel the baby coming down. You know, I can feel like them inching towards. Pushing feels so good. Like, to me, I feel really hot and sweaty and like I'm going to throw up. And those are the ways, like those are things that come up while I'm pushing. As opposed to being in labor feels more like the romantic version of, you know, birthing, which is whatever that means to you. But to me, like that sort of being in labor, having the waves, riding the waves, but we get to the end, the pushing part, and it feels like it's a lot of work for me to push the big babies out. And so so then I'm going to like kind of skip through 4 hours of pushing into towards the end where we get to this point where I'm on all fours at this time and I've been in a lot of different positions during this pushing process. And the midwife's assistant is there now. So that feels really good. I'm like, okay, things are really happening. She's warming up blankets. Like things are moving along. Baby's getting closer. I can feel it. I can feel that that's happening. And then the baby gets gets a little stuck. There's like a sticky shoulder moment where the midwife gets nervous and my doula comes into my ear. There's a whispering going on. Yeah, there's like a little – I don't hear any of that, just so you guys know. Like,
yeah, we were here. We were privy to it.
Right. This is only information I have after the fact. For me, I was just fully focused on pushing baby out and I felt good and I felt positive and my story is that I wasn't feeling any fear at all, which is great because it means that no one was giving me that energy. Everyone was like giving me really positive energy. And then there was a moment while I'm pushing and everyone's encouraging me that my doula – and I'm exhausted at this point and I get to this moment where I'm about to push out the baby, but it feels really intense and – I don't have any contractions happening, but my doula comes into my ear and she says, the baby's been in there for a long time. You need to push him out. You got to do it now. And she was like, so get inside of yourself and give yourself a really big push. And come on, Sarah, push that baby out. And she starts coaching me in this way that is, I could cry right now. Oh my God. I could cry talking about it because
I have goosebumps.
Because I swear if it wasn't for her in that moment, I don't think I would have had the energy to do that. And it was such a critical moment to get him out of my body because he'd been stuck. And so – and the midwife was like – she had her hands up inside of me underneath his shoulders trying to – yeah, I'd been flipped over. My husband had said in my
– to the Gaskin maneuver.
Yeah, my husband had said like we need to turn her over into the Gaskin maneuver. You know, because the baby's stuck. And so that puts your hips in a different position and helps the baby to like reposition and then come out in a different, in like a different way. And this is an Ina May Gaskin move that he read about in the book that I gave him and said, please read this book. And he did.
Yeah.
And the Gaskin maneuver. Which is so cool. He was like, we need to do the Gaskin maneuver. And the midwife was like, let's do it. Let's turn her over. And everybody like turned me over. And so this was that moment where the doula's in my ear and she's pumping me up and saying like, come on, mama, you've got this, reach down. Like,
and then the whole room started being like, come on.
Yes.
Sarah.
And they were like, push this baby out. And I didn't even have a contraction at that moment. I just started pushing and I pushed with everything inside of me and the baby came out. And I will tell you that nothing feels better in this life than the moment the baby exits your vagina. Once
it is so true.
Once it's out, you're like, oh my gosh, that was the best feeling ever. Just that last moment of getting baby out, and you're like, oh, it's done.
It's over.
It's done.
And then you have this gorgeous, tiny floppy little meat like, oh my goodness.
And I even left out the part, which is fine because I don't want to traumatize anyone, where I did pop a rib out of my chest, but it was a moment where I was pushing up here in my chest, my upper chest, instead of like pushing down in my bottom. And so I was just...
You should push like you're doing the biggest poo in the world.
Yes. And I was using a lot of like upper body energy instead of lower body. And I, it was too much for my ribs to handle. So yes. Wyatt came out. He was amazing, healthy, very big. He was almost 10 pounds. He was, and it was fantastic. That's Wyatt Olson's birth story. That takes a really long time to tell a birth story.
It does. I love that we thought we were going to have episode for two birth stories. Like, hey, y'all, we might have to do mine next week.
I think maybe this is part two. There's going to have to be part one, and then part two is your birth story.
Yes, this is part one, and then we're doing part two.
That's right.
Yeah, because I don't want to just pivot all of a sudden into mine. I want to talk to you about that for a second.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Okay, so once – tell me about that first hour post – first birth. How did that feel? Pushing out the placenta, that third stage, like, please break that down for us.
Oh, wow. You know what's so funny is it's not a part that you normally talk about. So I do remember it all very well. I was very tired, but I was riding a high that was happening in the room, which is amazing. I was not necessarily hungry, but when food arrived in front of me from like you or Casey, somebody brought me lasagna, I was so excited to eat it. There was just so much going on in the room, right? Like the midwife is cleaning up, the midwife's assistant's there, the baby's on my chest. Like, I just can't stop looking at him and holding him, and he's so squishy and dumpling-y. He feels like a big fat dumpling on my body. And Eric's next to me, and he's like, he just can't, you know, he looks so tired, and he just like can't even process what's happening. He's looking at the babies, making sure baby's okay. And also, we're at home and we're brand new parents, and everyone's cleaning up to leave, and we're kind of like, he's looking at me like, wait, everyone's leaving? Like, what are we supposed to do? And also, I'm looking at him like that too, but I'm also seeing like triple vision. Like, I feel like I'm just so out of it at this point. And I definitely, after my second birth and my third birth, it's very clear that my first one was a lot, because I was so much more out of it. They asked me to go get in the shower to clean myself off. And so they were helping me into the shower. But because I had hurt my rib, I actually couldn't lift my hands above my head. So I was just trying to like quickly rinse off in the shower. And then they helped me out. And then, you know, baby is on my chest for definitely an hour. Placenta's there. They're showing me the placenta, like all of that happens before the shower, but the placenta's there. It's massive. I could not believe that was inside of me. I was like, what is happening? I mean, you have to birth the placenta. If you've never given birth before, that's part two. So birth is part one. Then you have to birth the placenta, and that comes out after. And that was not a hard process for me. For me, the placenta, I just had to like – I didn't realize I was going to have to push again. So I was like, are you joking me?
It's that worst
feeling. I've pushed for 4 hours. The baby's out, and now you're asking me to push again? And
I hate it.
They were very gentle about it, I think. Like, when I gave birth later at my hospital births, you'll hear this on another show, but they're very rough with pushing your stomach to help release the placenta and make sure everything's contracting and, like, you know, getting – you really want to get the placenta out right after. And so that part at the hospital was rough, but at home I don't remember that being so rough. I remember them sort of pushing on my tummy a little bit, and then I had to do a lot of pushing, and then I pushed – not a ton, just like a few pushes, and I got the placenta out. Placenta came out. Mm-hmm. That also feels amazing, by the way. Warm, squishy.
It does, doesn't it?
It kind of like – it's like a heating pad coming through all this area that has – that, yes. You know, that had like a lot of –
stretching and hurting pressure. And pressure and maybe skid marks. Like there's a lot that goes on coming out of your vagina. So this heating.
Oh yeah. Did you tear? You didn't tear. Did you?
I had skid marks is what they called it. Like where you.
Skiddies.
It's just kind of like red, but I didn't tear.
Like a graze.
The gray. I got grazed.
Yeah.
So the placenta comes out. Placenta's plopped on the bed. Babies. It's like in a bowl. The baby's laying on my chest. Midwife's checking the baby out, making sure everything's clear. You know, my husband's next to me and he's looking at this baby. We're both just like, what just happened? It was putting myself back there. I'm like, I just remember being like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe. I'm so glad this is over. You know, that part was major and I was glad that it was done.
It's shocking how physical it is.
Yes.
I was like a shade of white watching you. And I remember I hugged her. I said goodbye. I made sure everything was good. And I got in my car and I drove and I just called Mark crying. Just crying. Like, I just can't do this. What have we done? Why am I pregnant? How's this baby going to come out? Like, you have no idea. And he was like, I do actually know because I have a stepson. So he had been through birth before and a home birth. But it sounded so traumatic. That birth is not beautiful, but also traumatic. And I was just like, what have I done? Like, I can't do it. Sarah's amazing. She's the only woman to ever be able to give birth like that. Who am I to think I could do anything like that? Like, it was, but it was so beautiful. In so many, you know, I think we've looked back on your birth and we've talked about it and we've talked to other caretakers, and in any other situation, there might have been that transfer to the hospital. And the fact that you managed to get through that and you were so calm and you just knew that you had to keep putting one foot in front of the other, you just didn't ever seem disheartened. You just kept going. And I just felt like that resilience was so profound.
Ugh.
It was so beautiful to witness.
Well, thank you. I don't know that there was never another option in my mind. It was like going into it, I was just going to listen to everyone around me, do everything that I could to make this happen. I really, really wanted the home birth. And I had in my head that I was like, okay, if I have to transition to the hospital, if I have to, like, if something, you know, comes up, then I'll do it, right? But I'm going to do everything I can to make this happen at home. And I wasn't discouraged because I guess I didn't I had so done so much reading about other birth stories before, and I'd watched them on videos, and I knew that this could be a process, but it was my first time. So I wasn't expecting pushing to be 15 minutes. I wasn't expecting, I don't know, like the water felt so fast to me, and yet that was like 4 hours, and I went over a huge milestone in the water, and I learned a lot about like what my body loves when I'm in labor is like water, you know, and being in the shower, being in the bath. So it was, I think just my will to keep going came from as long as everyone around me seemed like everything was fine and safe, then I was just going to allow myself to stay in my safe place. And by the way, I think there was a lot of moments where things didn't necessarily feel safe in my home birth, and none of you guys let me think that. Like when we were done and everyone was cleaning up and I was laying there with Wyatt and I was definitely exhausted, I felt this major high of how incredible that experience was, and now I'm this mom and this is my life and I'm so excited to start this journey. But everybody else had a really intense experience watching me push for 4 hours and this process and getting scared at the end about like having to go on all fours and all this stuff and the baby needing to come out when it needed to come out. There was a lot – everyone had a little piece of of, you know, something inside of them that was like, it was kind of got kind of hairy at the end.
It was a bit sobering. I think I was just, I had read all the books as well. And I was like, it's just going to be like one of these. She'll go into the field.
And yeah. And squat and the like, baby comes out. Uh-huh.
Squat, the baby comes out. And it was just like, it was so intense yeah. to watch. And it, you just went to that place that you had to do to survive it. And it, but it felt really, it also felt really big for me, I think probably because I was staring down the barrel of having to do that in, you know, 6 months' time. So, yeah, I just, you were Wonder Woman. You really, I just was like, there's nothing, no one will ever be as strong as this woman. It was unbelievable what you conquered. But I think it definitely informed your choices in the future mm-hmm. when you were pregnant again, because it got to that place, because, you know, it did. It sort of took a turn at the end there where everyone started feeling slightly wobbly, but you just pushed through and we got it and we had that amazing outcome that we all wanted, a healthy baby and yeah. healthy mama and all those things. But I think, you know, that probably did help shape your decisions in the future
yeah.
when you got pregnant again.
It definitely did. It made me think, you know, if I'm going to – apparently, you know, my midwife had told me that when you have big babies, the chances of you having a bigger baby the second time are pretty good. So I was like, well, if my baby's going to be bigger the second time, I think maybe I'm going to try doing this in the hospital with, mm-hmm. you know, an amazing OBGYN that makes me feel really good and really safe and just in case, because if Wyatt got stuck and he was, you know – almost 10 pounds, like if this baby's any bigger, like let's just play it safe. And you know what? For the second pregnancy, which we'll talk about later, that did feel like the safest choice for me. And it wasn't a choice based out of like, oh, I'm afraid. It was a choice based out of what feels – I'm going to check in with myself and see what feels the most comfortable for this birth. I had a home birth. It was amazing. For my second birth, which is not – normally people will have like a hospital birth and then do a home birth for their second birth or their third birth or whatever, right?
It's the other way around.
And so I had a home birth and then I was like, okay, I think for this next birth, it feels better for me to do it at a hospital, but still birth the same way that I want to birth. And and it totally turned out that way, which was awesome. And it's funny, like it made me way less afraid of doing a hospital birth and I'm more open to just like, you know what? I think birthing is happening within us. It is who we put around us. It's the people that we've asked to be on our team. It's the mindset and what I've prepared myself for. And if it happens in a car, on a sidewalk, in my house, or in a hospital or a birthing center, it's going to be my story, my birth with this baby, our journey, and I'm going to own it. And I'm going to be grateful that, you know, that the baby comes out healthy. Like, that was my plan. So
absolutely.
Thank you guys for coming along with my birth story. Sorry that it lasted so long, Teresa, and we'll get to yours in part two.
No, it was so beautiful. I'm so glad we gave it all the time that it needed because it's such a special one. And I think there's probably so many people listening right now who are pregnant for the first time and thinking about, oh, what is my birth going to look like?
Yeah.
So I love that we're sharing these very different stories, your story and my story that we'll hear in part two, they are different. And then you'll hear our subsequent births when we're sharing which are every also single very one different. Of our births. They're all so different. And yeah, it's just my favorite topic in all the land. So I'm so glad that we got to do that.
That's another really cool thing about reading, you know, if you've read our book or if you've read Ina May's books, when you're reading other people's birth stories, you realize that like there's no two stories that sound the same, right? So mm-hmm. my experience was what it was. And although you've maybe just listened to it and been like, wow, that was really intense, I do want you to know that, like, for me, as the person who's going through that experience, and I was the birther, it wasn't an intense experience for me. It was intense in terms of like, okay, this was like a lot of pressure and is my first time, and like I'm feeling pressure in my body and I'm feeling the rushes and like all of those things. But this wasn't a scary thing for me. It was a beautiful and incredible experience. And I'm grateful to my doula because she was such a champion in my ear, and to my friends, and to my husband, who was like my rock through the whole thing. And I'm that story to me, that experience to me was amazing. So although it might sound kind of like insane or intense, I want you to know that when you're in it, you're really in it. Like it's all happening with you, to you, and around you. So I don't want anyone to walk away feeling fear from that. Everyone's story is unique to themselves.
Beautiful. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Mother Days.
And join us for part two when we get to hear Teresa's story with Bodhi.
That's right. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Bye.